All right, good to be with you on a Tuesday. Today is cut down day in the NFL. 3 o'clock today is the deadline. We'll get to Will Anderson Jr. on with Chris Long on the Green Light podcast. This was a fun conversation because these are two guys. You know, Chris Long's a former defensive lineman in the NFL who's excellent on his podcast. He's one of those guys, Seth, that I feel like really watches all the teams out there. Like his opinions, at least on the Texans, they feel very informed. His opinions do. You know, it feels like Chris Long is dialed in.
He really prepares for his interviews and like he watches. He watches a lot of football.
Yeah.
So and especially with the defensive linemen, he obviously has a special affinity for.
His enthusiasm goes up, I think, when he talks to guys who played his position. And Will Anderson Jr. already a super enthusiastic guy. It made for great energy in that conversation. So let's get right to it here. Here's Will Anderson Jr. on the Greenlight podcast talking about the offseason he had working out with Myles Garrett and Micah Parsons.
For me, man, you got to show up every single day. Like, you have to be the same guy every single day, man. If you don't feel like it, you tired, my body hurt, nobody care. Mm-hmm. You got to show up and be consistent every day. You're getting graded every day. It don't matter if you're one or two or three, they're evaluating you every day. And that's my challenge. And my challenge is always, man, it's more to give. The person behind me trying to take my spot or this person don't respect me. And we got a coach named Ben, and I'll be telling him he's coming. And he's like, what's wrong with you today? So it's the same thing, man.
Yeah.
Nobody respect me. But it's just a little thing in my head where I'm just like, man, that's what keeps me going. It keeps me on edge.
You got to have that, though.
Got to.
It's almost like people say don't be afraid of anything. But you got to have a little fear. I was just talking to Jared Allen, Jared Allen, and he was talking about, hey, one of the number one things that motivated me was fear of failure, fear of not being respected, fear of somebody taking my job.
Yeah.
Even if it's unrealistic,
facts.
You got to almost trick yourself.
I worked out with Myles Garrett and Micah Parsons this offseason. And, you know, I'm really big on my faith. And I was like, God just has this beautiful plan, man. And I got to work out with them. And I got to see the way they worked and hear they talk and their mindsets and stuff like that, man. And Micah calls himself a lion and, you know, Miles is whoever he is. He's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, but they both were just so like, I'm the best. Like, I don't care who's in front of me, behind me. Like, I'm the best. And I was feeding off that because I'm like, okay, like, this is what I'm working out with. Like, these two legends right here. And then they breathe confidence into me. Guys, like, bro, you a dog. And they was like, what you mean people don't respect you, bro? People respect you in this league. And I was like, that's what y'all think. You know what I'm saying? And then every day was just a constant grind competing with them. And it really just changed my mindset even more because I'm like, everybody's working. When you think you the only one, everybody's working. And it really shifted my mindset, this whole thing. Like, you got to go every day. It ain't no day to be late. It ain't no day to be off. Like, you got to go every single day.
I really like the discussion about fear because Greg Popovich would always say that you got to have the appropriate amount of fear. There's always with zero fear in life, you can claim that you're fearless and you got a no fear bumper sticker and everything. You'd be dead already. There's nobody that makes it through life with zero fear and actually survives past, especially being a teenage boy. So like, there's something that keeps you in check, but you got to learn how to balance all of it. But as Will was talking about, you know, nobody respects me or always keeping that chip on your shoulder or just having that appropriate level of fear. I remember talking to Tony Boselli, Hall of Fame offensive lineman, and Bruce Matthews has said something similar to what Tony told me, which is I was surprised that those guys, they were always nervous before games. Like, they're never – Bruce Matthews played 20 years in the NFL, was a Hall of Famer, but never lost that kind of like, oh, I don't want to suck. Oh, boy, I don't want to suck today. Like, so obviously they've got confidence, but it's okay to have a little bit of self-doubt as long as you know how to manage it and you use it to fuel you. I feel like Will's in a pretty good place for that. I think the biggest thing with Will is there's people like him so much, it's going to be harder for him to find the nuggets to put his chips on his shoulder. It's going to have to start
from the outside, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to have to start being he's going to have to go full diva and be like, no, unless you think I'm the best pass rusher in the league, then you might as well be spitting in my face.
Yeah. I just think, let's keep playing Will here. I can tell you what I think of Will this season. But here is Will Anderson Jr. just talking about – this is really interesting, Seth, just talking about how heading into year three, he's thinking about things less. His body is just kind of taking over – when guys are trying to block him.
He was like, you work hard, you do all this stuff, bro, and you're going to look up one day. He said, your body's going to naturally just take over. Like, you're going to have repped it so much that when you get out here, bro, you're not even going to know what you did. Your body's just going to naturally do it. And I think that's where I'm starting to get to at the point of my career. Was like, my body's just starting to take over. I'm playing faster. I'm seeing things faster. Like, I used to go into the game like, or I used to go get ready to line up. I'm like, I'm finna do this move. I'm finna stab club. Now I'm just like, well, whatever the tackle give me, I'm gonna play off of it. And my body's just taking over now. Yeah. Like, I think what was happening was I was having a set move in my head. And when that set move didn't work, I would get frustrated because I'm like, the move is not working. The move is not working. So now I'm just free. I'm just playing like, oh, the tackle when the angle set me, I'm popping inside. He when a vertical set me, I'm going to stab. I'm going long. Where I'm like, now I'm starting to see the different sets of what tackles are giving me.
Yeah. And good point, yes. Sirianni. It's true. Talent take. That's what Will is saying right there. Less thinking equals talent takeover. The he that he talked about at the beginning that was telling him this is what's going to happen. Your body's going to take over is Daniil Hunter. He was talking about a conversation.
Right, and you remember Daniil, when I talked to Daniil this summer in West Virginia, I asked him about that move that he hit versus Penei Sewell that was an incredible, awesome move that was completely improvised that he had no he said it just happened. It just happened. Like, that's the muscle memory taking over. We used to have a coach, Frank Gant Sr., who I know you've heard me talk about, who is the awesome, awesome special teams coach. But he used to he would give us an education in jazz music, which, you know, it feels like whatever, however bad it might be to make a Seinfeld reference these days because the young people don't get it, I feel like jazz jazz music is eight times worse. Like, there's an element of jazz where you're not thinking about it. You're just going. But it's not like all of a sudden you become a good jazz musician just by going and blowing into a saxophone. It takes a whole lot of practice. And it takes you have to get really, really good at it to get to the point where you can just improvise. But that's what the great pass rushers do. It's that everything is drilled so much that you get into the game and you've got a plan, but everything beyond that is just kind of improvised, and it's muscle memory. And that's what Will is getting to that point. All those things that from his rookie year that I told you that he needed to be working on, he's been working on it. And it's really cool to see it kind of just hit automatically now where he doesn't have to think about it.
The analogy that popped into my head when I was listening to him say that, and this may be extreme, but I'm like, man, he sounds like his first 2 years, and especially maybe his rookie year, is he's like a hitter in the batter's box, deciding what he's going to do before the pitcher throws the ball. Like, I'm going to swing at this. No, I'm going to take this one, you know, before even knowing what the pitch looks like, you know?
I wonder if that's, that's what he was like.
That's what before. He was like. Now it's okay. Yeah. Okay, here it is. This is a curveball. I'm going to hit it, you know?
Yeah, like, your approach as a hitter is that, that's interesting because you could go like the spectrum of the batters who are super cerebral and that do guess a lot.
Yeah.
Like that's, as a pass rusher, you can't be like that.
Right.
You can't guess that, all right, this is what the guy's going to do, and then I'm going to do this. Yeah. And then if he does this, I'm going to do that. Like, it just doesn't typically play out that way.
So Will Anderson Jr., this is the last one here we'll play. We've got more we'll play later in the show. But this is him talking about his relationship with Daniil Hunter.
He's a guy, man, that I watch. There's nobody in this league like him.
Yeah.
And I got to give a huge shout out to him because, man, like, he deserves all the recognition, man. Bro, he's one of the best to do it.
He's
like,
incredible.
He is nobody that rushes like him. Is nobody that gets off like him. Is nobody that uses moves like him. That has more moves than Daniil Hunter, and that's winning with them like constantly and getting pressures like he does. And he's one of those guys where I watch up like, Daniil, you in your own category, big dog.
Exactly.
I'm gonna let you have it. I don't want to try anything or attempt to even put my body in those positions to even do it. But he's a dog.
That's another thing that is hard, is where you have to kind of learn who you are. Is every young athlete wants to, like, I hear these college prospects talk about, you know, developing their vast arsenal of pass rush moves, and it's tough because very few of them are guys that should want a vast arsenal of pass rush moves. A lot of the best pass rushers have two really good moves. You know, it's like pitchers, you know, like, there's some guys that have 6+ pitches and that's great. Most guys shouldn't just go into a game with this huge arsenal of pitches.
That's right.
You got to get really, really good at two pitches and then build on and add another one and then add another one. And Will has said a few times now in interviews, Daniil is Daniil, I'm me, and I'm never going to aspire to be the same type of pass rusher that Daniil Hunter is. I'm just a different type of guy. Doesn't mean you can't be as good as him. It's just it's a different type and it's a different style.
Daniil you know, he was named the 25th best player in the NFL Top 100, and they did the video, the, you know, the 3.5 minute video they do for everybody. I don't know that I've ever watched one of those videos where it's just a bunch of his peers describing this vast moveset that he has.
Right.
Like Danielle Hunter is a unicorn in the way he goes about his job.
Yeah, he does. He's kind of an artist.
Yeah.
And well, that was, you know, the reason he gained weight this offseason, this is where I'm really excited to watch Danielle, is the reason he gained weight, or at least he was focusing on gaining strength, and he ended up gaining weight.
And what did he gain, like five to 10 pounds?
5 pounds or so, but on a guy that's got like 6% body fat, that's... Yeah. That, you know, usually people say they gained 5 pounds of muscle, and it's like, nah, it was 2.5 pounds of fat and 2.5 pounds of muscle.
Right.
There was, is that he felt he was too finesse last year, so he wants to bring more of the power back into his game. And that's going to be fun to watch, because it's not like he had a bad year or anything.
Yeah.
But I think that you might see a different, improved version of Danielle Hunter at the age of 30.
Yeah, maybe so. Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll play some more Will Anderson a little bit later in the show. Text message. Okay, this is interesting. And it's a texter, so I'll take it at face value. Says, just heard Schefter on ESPN say the Texans are shopping Cam Robinson. So texter, no disrespect. I didn't see it, so I don't know that to be necessarily true. But I do think it's an interesting topic. Should the Texans be shopping Cam Robinson if they feel like there's... If they feel Ariante Ursary is ready to be the left tackle for this football
team. Right. Well, and then there's also an element, too. I've wondered about this. It's you want to be an organization that kind of handles free agency the right way, and a lot of times it's whatever the opposite of the Bengals is. You just want to be sure that if you give assurances to somebody, or if you I don't want to say make promises. Nobody makes promises, but if you sell Cam Robinson, you know, hey, I know you might have better offers elsewhere. Come here. You'll play for a year and, you know, maybe you know, parlay that into a better contract as you hit free agency again the next year. And now, because you draft Ariante Ursary and he does such a good job during camp, Cam Robinson might not step on the field at all this year.
Yeah.
So there's two parts there. One, if people want to trade for Cam Robinson, then yeah, bring in some assets. Don't make a stupid trade. But two, you want to do right and kind of maintain a philosophy and a reputation as an organization that handles things the right way, that it might be best for Cam Robinson if he can go somewhere where he's going to definitively have a chance to start.
Yeah, yeah. That the whatever the sales pitch was to Cam Robinson, that's a really good point, because the Texans have been that place where guys have come in and gotten those one-year deals and gone on to either get another deal multi-year like Dalton Schultz from the Texans, or they've moved on to other places. I think the variables in this are, one, not variables, but I think factors in this whole thing are, one, Cam Robinson is set to make at least $12 million this year. This could be, if he's not going to be one of your starting tackles, that's a high price you're paying for a guy to sit on the bench to be your swing tackle. And I've read reports on Cam Robinson, Seth, like I haven't watched a ton of Cam Robinson in Jacksonville or Minnesota, that he's not the ideal swing tackle because he's really just a left tackle is what he's been. He's not played both. Doesn't mean he can't, but he's not played both. I think the other variable, and I think it was Aaron Wilson I saw a report from, that Trent Brown is progressing very well from whatever ailments he had that kept him on the PUP list.
It was a torn patellar tendon.
That's another variable. If they feel like Trent Brown can be the swing tackle for $3 million and he's healthy and ready to go, and I guess we'll learn more about that here in the next 8 hours, you know, where they're at on Trent Brown, because he's been on the PUP list all camp. There's a few moving parts in this whole thing that I think make a Cam Robinson trade feasible, you know, that make it sensible to do.
And I think, Blake Fisher got off to a real rough start during training camp. And that second preseason game, I think he did a lot of really good things. But he still looks like a guy that still needs developing. Yeah. So I don't think they've abandoned Blake Fisher yet or anything. And I think they're open to, if he continues to improve, that, all right, we can, if Trent Brown gets injured again or if he's just not working out, then we still do have Blake Fisher. They might feel more comfortable about offensive tackle as a whole right now.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, if somebody out there is willing to trade for Cam Robinson, something respectable, the stock up the coffers.
Yep. For sure. That's my biggest concern heading into the season, coming out of training camp. But even with the news on Joe Mixon's situation, and if you missed it, Joe Mixon is going to miss at least the first four games because he's going to start the season on the non-football injury reserve list. So he's got to miss by rule at least the first four games. I would say my biggest concern coming out of camp, Seth, is that is the improvement that we saw in the offensive line real? Or is this just, they were playing, you know, they only played a few series against other teams ones. Teams are being very vanilla in the preseason. And they're playing the Rams in week one. So we'll find out pretty quickly. They've got a good, you know, defensive front. That's my biggest concern, is the offensive line improvement that we're all so enthusiastic about. Is that for real or is it fake?
I would add to that just the blocking in general with the tight ends and the fullback. I think Jakob Johnson, I feel like people get excited about it just simply because he's a fullback and there's a nostalgic value to having a fullback on your team. And everybody gets excited like, yeah, we're going to be blood and guts, old school football. I wasn't super enthused with the way he blocked in the preseason games. So there's still work to be done there when you are using a fullback. So, and the offensive line, right, what's the degree of difficulty? Teams aren't game planning for you. There's an element to the way Nick Caley wants to run the ball, or at least the way they did in the preseason, that is, it's a physical battle. Yeah. It's like you got to just, it's a sumo wrestling match at times. And are these the guys that can really do that versus some of the best defensive tackles in the league? The Titans game will be interesting. You got Jeffrey Simmons and Tavondre Sweat, who physically manhandled your offensive line last year. It's calling the plays is one thing, but actually getting it done on the field is the other part of it. So I'm confident that there won't be as many negative plays this year in the run game as there were last year, just because this style of football lends itself well to preventing, you know, slanting defensive linemen or stunting linebackers from getting into the backfield on a run play.
Yeah.
So I think that part's going to be better, but I want it to be can it be a plus running game? Can it actually, instead of just being an average rushing attack, which would be a huge improvement over last year, can you actually be a plus running game, especially without Joe Mixon?
There's three elements to it. There's the play caller, there's the talent level, and there's the toughness. And I think last year, obviously, there ended up being concerns about the guy pushing the buttons because he got fired. The talent level, I think, was decent last year, especially with Laremy Tunsil there. I just don't think they were very tough. This year, I think they're tough. I trust Nick Caley to this point as much as I can trust somebody who's only had one preseason to show me what he's all about. We'll just see if a defensive or an offensive line that's journeyman at left guard, rookie at left tackle, guy who started one game in the NFL at center, journeyman, you know, Ed Ingram was on a journeyman's path. At right guard, and then you know Titus Howard, who's had ups and downs, but had a good training camp. I think that's going to be the, especially if they're shopping Cam Robinson, like the texter tells us Adam Schefter is saying. I think that's a real tell, like who the starting five is going to be in week one.
And CJ basically, I mean, when given an opportunity to talk about the offensive line the other day at the joint practice, he named those five guys, didn't. CJ's usually good about adding other people into the mix and not forgetting names or leaving them out. So, I don't want to say it's a no-brainer, but I haven't seen any reason to believe that it's not going to be those five.
Yeah, I agree. The number two, so that's my number one concern. My number two is the Joe Mixon situation, which I think is intertwined with the number one concern, because of the offensive line, if it turns out that they're blocking like last year's offensive line, where Joe Mixon, let's face it, a lot of those 1,000-plus yards he had, he made on his own. It was not because the run blocking was great. You know, can Nick Chubb and Damian Pierce and Woody Marks, I think that's going to be your three-headed monster probably in week one. Maybe not in that order, but I think those are your top three guys, if I had to guess. Can they make chicken salad out of the chicken bleep that Joe Mixon was doing last year?
Right. Yeah, and that's where with Chubb's vision is what encourages me the most when it comes to just getting positive yardage in this style of offense. And I think that whatever pop or explosiveness he doesn't have compared to his prime, I think he's just still sees the blocking really well. And if he gets a crevice, he's got the leg strength to turn it into a 4-yard run. And I played a reel of all of his runs from the second preseason game on my YouTube stream yesterday. And it was interesting because he averaged 5 yards per carry without any huge carries. It wasn't like, you know, he had one 25-yard carry and then was stuffed at the line a bunch. Yeah. But when people watch the end zone copy, a 4-yard run looks like you might as well have gotten stuffed. If people don't watch the end zone copy all the time, because a lot of people were making that comment, like, I don't know, he just looks like he's getting stuffed a lot. Like, no, he had one run for 2 yards, but the rest of it, they were just churning out positive yardage or some of the shorter yardage ones he was getting a first down. I think you're going to get that. I think you're going to get a good enough rushing attack that CJ and the skill position guys have something to work with.
Yeah.
That you're not in desperation mode. And above and beyond that, I think that as long as he stays healthy, Mixon will probably gain back a little bit more of the pop and, excuse me, not Mixon.
Chubb.
Chubb.
Yeah.
Chubb will gain back a little bit more of that pop and explosiveness. I don't know how much more, but I think you'll see an increasingly better version of him. It's just I don't know what the total ceiling is on that at this stage of his career.
His long carry in the game you're talking about, where you put up all five of his carries, was 9 yards. So right. he had five carries for 25 yards with a long of 9. And again, I don't care about the yards per carry. I care about the down and distance that Nick Chubb is getting you in. Because I have confidence if you're staying ahead of the chains, if you're getting 2nd and 7, if you're getting 3rd and 3, 3rd and 2, C.J. Stroud, especially in the quick game that we saw him getting more and more proficient at as camp went on, can move the chains for you. That's the big thing. I don't need 4.5 yards per carry. I need 2nd and 6.
You need, well, if you look at last year, the Texans ran the 6th most play action pass attempts in the league. And they're doing that with one of the worst
dog
rushing
crap
offenses
run
in
game.
The league.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, and it's not the, you don't have to have an awesome rushing attack to set up the play action. But you got to be taken seriously, and they weren't. Nobody was taking them seriously in the run game. Nope. It was, if anything, you were just like, all right, maybe Mixon gets it past the line of scrimmage, then we'll worry about it. But our guys up front can take care of it. This year, I think, again, because of the style of run game that they're going to run, it has to be accounted for as long as you're just steadily churning out yards, and it's going to set up the play action. I think that part of it, tying the run and the pass game together, it's going to look more like right this year than it did the last couple of years.
I agree. So my number one concern, O-line improvement, was it real? Joe Mixon's situation is number two. The secondary depth is number three. I don't know that they've solved much in the secondary, Seth, in terms of, hey, if this guy gets hurt, then, you know, last year, Kamari Lassiter gets hurt and you're trotting D'Angelo Ross out there. Now, I don't think D'Angelo Ross is going to make this team. I think there's better options in camp. I think there's guys who've had better camps, quite honestly, than D'Angelo Ross has had. I do think Jalen Smith is a factor here, the third-round rookie. You know, if some of the things he did in camp translate into the regular season, then you may be okay if you may be able to get through a couple of weeks if something were to happen to Stingley and Kamari Lassiter. You know, it's funny. It's two USC rookies, but it's a little like, hey, you're kind of, with this Mixon situation, you're kind of counting on Woody Marks right now to be a factor. And I think with the fact that the other backups are guys like Tremont Smith and Miles Bryant, and the other guys who are in the running are guys like D'Angelo Ross, Arthur Millett, that Jalen Smith all of a sudden is sort of the Woody Marks of the secondary, where you're like, okay, we need this rookie to be ready to go. You know, if something happens to our top guys.
My favorite thing of the USC dynamic, though, is that when the Texans draft the same players from multiple schools like Iowa State, or just even some of the other players they've drafted. You know, Nick and D'Amico have talked about the coaching staffs at Iowa State or at Minnesota or at Rutgers or any of these. They keep drafting guys from USC, but nobody's saying like, yeah, Lincoln Riley does such a great job developing these guys. I think they're looking at USC almost as if like, boy, there's some bargains there because those guys don't get developed for squat.
I think
USC.
That's exactly what it is.
They get great recruits, dude, and then they do nothing with them.
If Kalen Bullock went to Alabama, he would have been a first round pick.
Yeah.
Right? Like if he got developed, I'm picking out. If he went to Georgia, you know, where Georgia has 7 guys drafted off their defense every year. If Kalen Bullock went to an SEC school like that or LSU or something like that, he probably would have been a first-round pick.
I swear when Lincoln Riley went to USC and people would cite the, oh, yeah, because, well, look, you're living at the beach instead of Oklahoma. I'm like, yeah, that's great and all, but most good football coaches are indoors 18 hours a day and then outdoors during practice. And then also, yeah, a walk on the beach is nice unless people are jeering at you and spitting in your face because you've let them down. It's much better to be carried on the shoulders of Okies than it is to be spit in the face by Californians.
See, this is where you're a little bit spoiled by having such an awesome wife. The Lincoln, I'm guessing Lincoln Riley's wife would rather live in Malibu than in Norman, Oklahoma. You know, you got happy wife, happy life. You know, that's, I'm just saying. Like, Lincoln Riley may not get to walk on the beach.
That's true.
But his wife and kids get to walk on the beach.
Especially if you're a football coach and you want to, you know, you don't want your wife to be complaining about how much time you spend at the office.
Right,
Yeah, she's got a lot more stuff. She can have a good-looking young personal trainer, some dude that, you know.
Jiu-jitsu instructor, perhaps.
I'm just having lunch with my personal trainer today, Lincoln. Don't worry.
That's right.
If you have to, I'm having lunch with him, but if you have to work until 10 p.m. tonight, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's cool. We'll find something to do.
Exactly right. Text message. A lot of people weighing in on this Texans running back situation. Nick Chubb feels like he could be a Carlos Hyde caliber running back from several years back. If you get a Carlos Hyde 2019 season out of Nick Chubb, you are laughing about that signing. Carlos Hyde was good for the Texans. He rushed for 1,000 yards in 2019. I know 1,000 yards is, you know, it's not what it was back in, you know, when it was a 14 game season. But you're paying Nick Chubb 1 year, $2.5 million, up to $5 million. If he gets to 1,000 yards, I'm guessing he's going to get $5 million. That's a bargain. Yeah. if you get Carlos Hyde 2019 out of Nick Chubb, I would sign those papers right now for Nick Chubb for sure. Multiple texts now telling us that Adam Schefter's bringing up this Cam Robinson thing. Someone even asking us, do you think this is something that Nick Caserio leaked to Adam Schefter to put it out there?
Oh, maybe.
Probably. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Maybe because, you know, Schefter was whining openly. I'll have the clip, the soundbite here in a few minutes or after the next segment, maybe.
Yeah.
But Schefter was kind of... It sounded like he was whining about the fact that nobody's told me anything, so I don't know if he's going to play or not. Like, all right, man.
All about,
like,
Mixon?
I tell you everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
About Mixon.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe Caserio's like, all right, Adam, you whiny bastard.
Here you go. Yeah.
Here you go. We're shopping Cam Robinson. Get it out. Get the news out there.
Shut up. Yeah. Go get us a fourth round pick for Cam Robinson. All right.
The big thing so when we talk about, all right, with Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
And if you want to view about how much of it last year was just created by Joe Mixon, any of his positive yardage or the fact that he got over 1,000 yards, the success rate, just like the, it's whether it was a successful run or not, you know, on first down, do you run for 4 yards? If it's like it's a certain percentage of yards left to go, all of that. Was it a successful run or not? Last year was his lowest success rate in terms of percentage of successful runs since his rookie year.
Mm.
And when he only had 178 carries his rookie year. So like it was 42.4%. In his best years in Cincinnati, it was up around 49 to 52%. Like, it was just, he just was getting met. He was meeting a brick wall, or he was getting contact in the backfield way more often last year than he was accustomed to.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, if you just give Joe Mixon the ability to get to the line of scrimmage without having to dodge somebody, he has a much better year last year than he did. You know, he has a much better year last year. Mixon, Chubb, I don't think he's got the same home run hitting ability right now that Joe Mixon does when he's healthy. But it's just, can you have successful runs 50% of the time? Can you get 4 yards? That's a huge improvement over last year.
That's what I was going to ask you. I mean, I see success rate all the time, but I'm guessing a lot of our audience doesn't know. That's just like, are you staying on schedule as success? Are you getting what you're supposed to get out of a run?
All right. It's on first down, do you get... It's a successful rush gains 40% of yards required on first down, 60% of yards required on second down, and 100% on third or fourth down.
Gotcha.
So if it's a 1 yard run, but it was third and one,
that's successful.
That's a successful run.
That makes sense.
It's if it's first down, do you get 4 yards?
Yeah.
And then on second down, do you get 60% of the yards required?
That makes sense.
So if it's second and six,
yeah.
Do you get 4 yards?
Yeah, you're getting into third and two. Yeah, that makes that makes. I've never had that explained to me before. That makes a lot of sense. How many more segments are you guys going to trash talk? He uses the S word, not trash. USC, because I love this. This is great. I'd be a Notre Dame fan right there. Oh, no, that's middle screen. He's a UCLA guy. That's why he likes it. That's why he likes it so much. Nick rarely floats anything, so when he does, Shefty salivates. Yes, Daddy, I'll find a home for your puppy. That's
Irwin. Okay, are you going to give me something about Mixon?
Right.
We'll see, Shefty.
Yeah,
we'll see.
We'll see.
Just simmer down there, fella.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Hey, shifting gears for a second, you brought up yesterday, you brought it up just in an analogy, that you said this would be like picking me being you, to run the mile on behalf of Sports Radio 610 in a competition.
Right, yeah.
And you were kind of...
I don't even remember what it was about, but it said, yeah, it was like picking Seth Payne to run the mile in the intramurals. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. On like to represent Sports Radio 610. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, I see what you're doing. That's self-deprecation. But then I started thinking about our staff here, and I'm like... You might be top three out of the like 11 or 12 of us that would be on the grid right now.
We don't have a great roster.
No, not to run long distances. No.
Yeah, this is like when you've had to roll out your fourth string quarterback or something because you just don't have that many good players.
Well, okay, so this begs the question: where do we think you would rank among the people at Sports Radio 6?
I don't look, man. Body weight matters. It just people don't have an appreciation
it's
for
it. It's a mile.
I know, but anything. I know that's not long distance, but it's endurance running.
Sure.
Every bit of fast twitch muscle fiber.
Yeah.
Almost every bit of it is useless when you start running a mile or longer.
Sure.
So you're just wearing a weighted vest.
Sure.
And not to mention my bone mass.
Yeah. No. Sure.
Sean, I'm in the 99.9th percentile of bone density.
Right.
Did
right.
You know
right.
that. That's why it's very hard for me to swim.
Okay.
Yes.
No, but yet two things can be true. All these things are working against you, and yet you could be one of the two or three best candidates we have. As I go down the roster, would you beat me in a mile, do you think?
Yeah, I think I would.
I think you probably would too. I've watched you. I've been in a gym with you working out when we go to the Super Bowl. I work out every day, but not like I do 30 minutes on the elliptical or I walk 4 miles. That's my thing every day. I've watched you do like 2 hour like interval workouts on an elliptical before.
Yeah, I still have that part. No matter what kind of shape I'm in, I can tap into that psychotic reserve of just having an out of body experience.
Yeah.
where I can't even feel my body. So through sheer pride, if it was you versus me, I'd figure out a way to somehow make it.
I think you would too. I think you would too. I'm not here to debate you on whether I would beat you. But I think you'd beat me. Ben, you have a cross country body. You're very skinny. Do you do any working out at all, Ben?
No.
Okay, you're screwed. Seth would beat you.
Ben, Ben used to be overweight. Sorry, Ben, I'm putting your business out here. But now you're in your BMI is on point now. But you know what you never got, Ben? I always feel bad about that. A lot of heftier guys have massive calves. Mm-hmm. And then when they lose weight, they still have those massive calves from just walking around all those years with the kids at Disney World and what have you, but you don't have those massive calves. And
no.
I feel like you got jilted in that regard.
All right, so Ben, you Seth would beat me. He would beat now Reggie. I think Reggie is one of those guys that looks more in shape than he actually is. I don't know what Reggie does for cardio, if he does anything. I mean, Reggie's very slender. There's no doubt.
Yeah, but I've seen Reggie, you know, I've actually talked to Reggie at times where he's like, man, I got all this stuff to do, but I should probably go work out.
Okay.
And usually after I have that conversation with him, he does end up going and working out.
Okay.
So I feel like he's got a certain discipline and he works out enough that, he's probably, I don't know how much cardio he's doing, but I think if we get, are we given like a month to train for this?
No. We have to run it tomorrow. We're doing it right now. Yeah, right now.
Yeah, I would still put Reggie up there though.
You would put Reggie ahead of you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about Lopez?
Lopez
is going to come in and say, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen with Lopez. He's going to come in today and say that he would definitely be top three.
No, 100%. I know he would.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Lopez used to swim all the time and everything.
Bingo.
But
yeah,
I don't think he does it anymore.
He doesn't have a pool in his backyard anymore. He moved into the city.
Yeah. And the age really matters when it comes to like, cardio type stuff. The age really, she takes a toll. And look, Lopez isn't a lot older than me, but I think he's old enough that I've still got that advantage.
I think I could beat Lopez. Yeah, I think I could beat Lopez. I think I could beat Lopez. I'm just going to put it
out. By the way, I don't think Ben, do you exercise at all?
No.
Okay, all right. I'll give myself over Ben.
I think I put you ahead of Figgy. Figgy just doesn't look like a runner. That's all. I know Figgy works out. He's in the gym here in our building. What about Clint? Might be the favorite.
Clint still does hard workouts too.
Yeah, and
he does a lot of like even circuit training type stuff that gives you even though you're not actually out there running and everything, it just your energy systems are primed for it. Especially for a mile.
Yeah,
if he's doing circuit training where he's gassed and everything. Yeah,
he's in a phase right now. Like he's lost a lot of weight and he works out and he's been focused on his diet. Like
Clint would beat me.
Yeah, I think Clint would be number one. I think he'd be the number one seed. I think you'd
so
beat,
far.
I think you'd so far. I think you'd beat Ron.
Okay,
I think you would beat Patrick Creighton.
Yeah.
I think
I'm just looking at Tyler. I'm trying to figure Tyler.
Tyler depends on what he did the night before, I think. You know,
Tyler has that. Yeah, I feel like Tyler could go 36 hours and show up and,
Tyler
and be
could,
all right.
Tyler might
like
be
36
able to
hours without sleep.
Yeah, like Tyler.
And show up and just and run a 5.5 minute mile.
I feel like he's got the widest range of results. Like Tyler might be able to run a 5.5 minute mile and we just don't know it. Or yeah. he might vomit after the first lap and pass out. And have a DQ next to his name. He just gets disqualified. Mm-hmm. That's a big variable. Would you take Bajani or Clint Sterner in running a
Bajani, 100%. Again, body weight matters, man. And, like, Clint's not fat, but he's big. He's 200. He's probably, what, like 225 right now?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah, like, any bit of, like, and honestly, the muscle does almost nothing for you in distance running.
Yeah.
And it's just extra weight that you got to lug around. So, I don't think, I think Bajani, plus Bajani works outside in the heat. A lot.
That's fine.
And just by virtue of all of that physical activity over long amounts of time, and his body type is much better suited for a medium distance run like that. That yeah.
Do we know if he works out, or does it matter to you whether or not Bajani?
It doesn't
works
even
out?
Matter. To
it really
me.
Doesn't matter. Okay.
I think most guys that work on their feet all day and any kind of a physical job.
Yeah.
Because Bajani has a fence building business and he does a lot of the work himself. He's just not out there, you know, overseeing everybody.
Yeah.
I think I would take a landscaper in a heartbeat. If you can weed whack for 8 hours in this heat all day long, But so Bajani, because of the physical labor part of it, yes. And he's not a smoker that I know of.
No, not yeah. No. I would say so too. And Chris Santiago, I just don't know enough about whether he works. He's not a fatty. I know that.
I would go Bajani, Reginald, Clint. That's my power ranking.
And then I think you're next. I think you don't make the podium, but I think you. I think you're. If there were another medal after bronze, I think you would get it.
I've got a torn meniscus though in my knee that I haven't gotten fixed because Dr.
You want me to rattle off the names again with all these caveats? Lopez, Ron, Patrick Creighton.
I know, but I don't know. I haven't ever seen
Ben, who doesn't
my meniscus.
Work out?
I haven't tested it. Like, it's not a fun feeling, man. I don't know. I might have to tap out, like, after three laps of my meniscus. I went to Dr. Lowe, and he said, Seth, we could try to fix your meniscus. But then he showed me all of the jagged edges in my actual knee joint.
Yeah.
And where, like, I can fix your meniscus. And the way I understood it was, the first time I take a step, all of these jagged edges are just going to kind of puncture your new meniscus.
They did their Monday weigh-in yesterday on the drive, and Clint failed his weigh-in. He's 240 right now.
Oh, Bajani.
Yeah. Bajani, dude.
240 is 240.
Dude, hey, possibly Seth Payne. You might have just made it up to the podium, my friend.
My brother did decathlon. My brother was a college wrestler, and he's in incredible shape. He did decathlon his senior year just for the hell of it, or I think his junior year. And he was awesome until he got to the mile at the end of it.
Yeah.
And he was in incredible shape, but he weighed like 200 pounds or something.
Yeah.
And he was dead last in the mile single time.
Okay, yeah. See, you've got some good data on this. I trust your opinion on it. I still think you're in the upper third of all of us here at Sports Radio 610. I can't wait to talk to Lopez about this. I truly think Lopez thinks he'd finish in the top three out of everybody at the station. Or everybody
his confidence
in the
is admirable.
Yeah,
he doesn't have that appropriate level of fear.
Although
talking about earlier,
people are pointing out that Lopez bitches about his hammies a lot, that his hamstrings would give out. So we'll find out. We'll find out when the guys on In the Loop get here. All right. Up next, the head coaches in the NFL getting advice. First time head coaches. This is the best piece of advice that I've heard from one coach to another about a truly embarrassing situation. We will have that for you coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast, real quick. Adam Schefter tweeted this. Thank you to our friend Larry and Stafford who screen grabbed the tweet. A name to watch today, Texans left tackle Cam Robinson, who the team has discussed trading per sources. Rookie Ariante Ursary has impressed this summer and looks ready to man the Texans left tackle position. So there you go.
That's good to know. We'll play some Adam Schefter later where he's just whining about how nobody's telling him anything about Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
And Sean and I suspect that maybe Casario's like, all right, Schefty, I'm sorry that you... So apparently us trying to withhold information is an inconvenience to you.
Yep.
So here you go. Here's some Cam Robinson info.
Yes. So The Athletic had an interesting piece yesterday on... first-time head coaches. They interviewed Kellen Moore, Liam Cohen, and Brian Schottenheimer, who were all head coaches for the first time in their careers, and they asked about, you know, some, what are the silliest things that you've had to deal with so far as a head coach? What's the best advice that you've been given so far by other head coaches? I loved this one that Liam Cohen got because it's such a similar situation. You guys know that, you know, I'm very judgmental of people who have bad introductory press conferences. Much to my own detriment, because yeah. I'm sure we had a good laugh at Dan Campbell biting off kneecaps back in. Exactly. Thank you, Ben. We had a good laugh and still do to this day. Hell, still do to a segment ago of things Nick Sirianni was saying in his opening. Okay, so I think a lot of people were forecasting failure for both of those guys, and they've been two of the most successful coaches of the last 5 years. Sirianni, you could argue, has been the most successful coach, maybe aside from Andy Reid, and he just took Andy Reid to the woodshed in the Super Bowl. So we know Liam Cohen had a moment in his introductory press conference. It might have been the worst out of all of them. Cohen said this: every single piece of advice from a former head coach or a current head coach that I spoke to has been be yourself. It was really cool. I spoke to Nick Sirianni at the owners' meetings. Obviously, everybody in the world was busting my chops about the introductory press conference. And then Liam Cohen, his introductory press conference. Cohen says, totally acceptable and understandable. But what was cool was Nick Sirianni grabbed me at the owners' meetings. I'd never met him before. And he was like, so Nick Sirianni proactively goes and seeks out Liam Cohen, pulls him aside and says, dude, use that. Use it as fuel. Your players will rally. They get scrutinized all the time in the media. So when their coach owns that, use it, take it, and ultimately just be yourself. You know, he gets crap all the time, Cohen said, for the sideline stuff or whatever. And that is true. Sirianni's act has continued into his – he's yelling at fans.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it becomes a huge talking point about whether or not he's got control of the team and all of that. Yeah.
But that's who he is.
Yeah.
And so the advice is be yourself, lean into it, own it. You know, and I'm guessing Liam Cohen in this interview owns it, says, man, totally acceptable that I'm getting my chops busted over this.
You know what? It's one of the things that's changed in sports so dramatically, I think, because of social media and because of the 24-hour news cycle, is that it used to be a lot easier to present a crafted image of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we live in a world now where it's just impossible to have a public life without all of your flaws or all of your mistakes being blasted out to the universe.
Yeah.
And I go back to stories. There used to be so many stories about Ted Williams and how protective he was of his image. And that there was he used to do these Boston Whaler ads. I think it was Boston Whaler. It was a boat of some sort.
Okay.
But like one of the tricks he used to pull was that he would cut it in half and keep driving the boat. But there was one time where it didn't work out and the boat actually sank. And it was like people were basically bullied into not saying anything about it or talk about it or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get away with that anymore.
Nope.
So you can't, if you try to fight it and try to fight every time you misspoke or try to squash this or that all the time, you spend all your time as a 24-hour PR disaster manager. So you got to just lean into it and just make your perceived weaknesses your strengths.
Yeah.
Just say, yep, that's me. You know, what are you going to do about it? We're moving forward.
People underrate how endearing self-deprecation is. I think in general.
Yeah.
And I, you know, like Cohen owning that, like Cohen should have an ad for a local restaurant in Jacksonville where they somehow find a way to work in his that, you know, like that's, you lean into it. You can see, hell, you can monetize it.
It's dicey though, too, because it's a classic. Hey, yeah, sure. It works for Sirianni. You know what also helps? Winning a bunch of
football games. Yeah, sure.
In a Super Bowl. And even after, even after they'd already been good, and then they had that down year 2 years ago, people are just attacking them for all of the personality quirks and flaws.
Yep.
Isn't it? It's the hardest advice to give when you tell somebody to be yourself, because you know it's so overly simplified. You tell somebody just be yourself. Like there's so much that goes into that.
Yeah.
Nobody that needs that advice ever hears it and thinks, oh, I never thought of it this way before.
Well,
off to the races I go. Like there's some work you got to do to get to that point where you feel comfortable.
Especially
being
when
yourself.
You give that advice to somebody you're not wild about to begin with. Like, just be yourself.
Yourself,
I don't like
because
you very
much. You'll sabotage yourself, and you'll be out of my life. So I don't have to worry about dealing with you anymore.
Definitely be yourself because my hobby is shot. Schadenfreude. Yes, be yourself.
It feels to me because there's times where I feel it's genuinely the right advice.
Yeah.
But it almost feels like you're punting on giving actual advice when you say to somebody, just be yourself.
Yeah. Because
truth be told, we all have little personality quirks that we could do better at.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe it's just like, okay, listen, what are you like what do you think your strengths are?
Right.
Let's really focus on those strengths and that's the best version of yourself and just really use those to your best advantage.
Someone gives you advice to be yourself, there's like a 70% chance they're just trying to end the conversation so they can get on with their day.
Yeah,
70%, yeah. I would say, yeah. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. I want to circle back.
The other advice that people will give is like, you know, maybe you're uncomfortable around crowds or anything. Just remember that, just tell yourself, I'm okay,
right,
no matter what people think of me. Like, well, yeah, that's an aspiration.
Yeah.
That's more like the person that needs that advice doesn't genuinely realize that they're okay.
Right.
I was like, you got to figure some things out before you get where you can just walk into a room full of people and be like, oh yeah, I'm just genuinely okay. I never thought of it that way before.
All right, Pettycast time. Let's get petty. We've got a lot of petties to get to.
Bunch of people who ain't okay.
713-5, you got that right. 713-572-4610. If you want to text in your petties, we'll read a few of them, but we got a ton of them to get to. Pettycast next.